Damn.
Oh, man.
Why was my mic up that loud? Audacity. Think about yourself. Okay. Just like me screaming in the ears of everyone. Great. Great stuff.
Yep. Yep. So how's it going?
Yeah, you know, it's going. I had a nice little week with my cousin in town. She was visiting unis here, and so, you know, I kind of got to talk to a young thing about, you know, what life might be. And hilariously, it's like, probably going to school here is a good idea for her, even though, you know, this place is collapsing. You know, she managed to come over here and, you know, see the shortest ever prime minister leave. And, like, I had to get really good at, you know, explaining what the parliamentary system is and why things are happening the way they are. And I'm like, look, I didn't say it made any sense. I'm just saying those are the rules, you know.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so, you know. Another day, another, you know, prime minister gone. Who knows? We got this new prime minister. Brand new prime minister that we didn't have last week. So that's nice.
New prime minister just dropped.
Mmm, that new prime minister smell. Well, this one is, we got a short king. It's like short king alert. Mm. He's very tiny. And also a billionaire. He? Yeah.
Oh, so good.
So it's gross because, like, all the libs are like, oh, wow, like, the first person of color to be prime minister. And it's like, yeah, if you are born massively wealthy, go to a private school that costs, like, £36,000 a year, go to Oxford, marry a billionaire, and are completely willing to just, like, have no principles at all whatsoever, you could be prime minister of the UK. It's beautiful. So, like, yeah. Don't worry, racism is over now. Right? It's done.
Oh, man. I'm glad you guys finally are getting rid of racism like we did when we elected Obama here.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Everything's been smooth sailing since that.
Exactly. So now we're doing it, and things will be fine, presumably. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everything is just smooth sailing and good times from here on out.
That's what everyone's saying about Britain.
Oh, man. I was sad that Boris didn't come back. In my heart of hearts, I was sad. I knew he wasn't going to because I think they basically told him, look, if you come back, the English economy is really going to break.
I thought he was going to come back.
People will be mad about it. And
yeah, it was really interesting because it's like there's two. It was sort of like which way Western Tory, because it was all like, because it was quite interesting. I really wanted Penny Mordaunt to get enough votes to get on the ballot, because this is the thing, is that the Parliamentary Conservative Party, as we call, like, the MPs who picked Rishi Sunak, all overwhelmingly really like Rishi Sunak. But the Constituency Conservative Party, which is, like, you know, the collection of, like, racists that are members of the Tories and can vote in these elections, hate him. Because A, they're racist, and B, they really like Boris. And so I was like, well, if Penny Mordaunt can get on the ballot, then Penny Mordaunt is going to win because all of the Tory members are going to vote for her. And then that's going to be like a banter. That's going to be banter timeline. But couldn't do it, couldn't do it. And also, I incredibly like how Boris was doing it, where he's like, yeah, I've totally got 102 MPs who said that I should go on the ballot, but you don't know them. They live in Canada. And
they don't go here.
They don't go here. And it was like, okay, cool. And then he was like, yeah, so I'm not going to stand. And it's like, but I also kind of thought he was going to get back in. And then I thought that was going to be really quite funny. Because, like, all I've got now, right, is just kind of like laughing at the ridiculous stuff that happens. Like, I've got no hope. It's just like,
Yeah. I mean, the current system is kind of, you know, irretrievably broken, at least in these two countries. Maybe not everywhere, but definitely in these two countries. And I don't know what else to do. I don't know what to do other than laugh to keep from crying or whatever, you know, because it's
that's right. That's right.
you know, Democrats are not going to save you.
Yeah,
Labor
are not,
which is going to have, you know, 70% of the English Parliament.
Yeah,
won't save you. It's nope. Yeah, good times.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, if and when they call an election, which I'll be interested to see how that works out. You know, it doesn't really matter when Labour gets in, really. Because basically Keir Starmer, who's the head of Labour, is just like an inveterate liar who will just say whatever it takes in order to get into power. So you can't believe anything he says. It's like, who knows what he'll do. But he's also like a cop. So it's not going to be like anything good. And he keeps just being like, oh, we're going to keep the racism, guys. Don't worry. The racism will stay on 11. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, like, so... I try not to be black-pilled because I don't think it's useful, but I'm just saying that, like, electoralism isn't going to save us, that's all, right?
Definitely not. No. Definitely not. you know. Yeah. When, you know, no country for old men, if the rule that you follow led you to this place, what use was the rule? And, you know, it's kind of cheesy to quote... movies, but at the same time, like, I don't know, the shoe fits. Seems kind of seems kind of apt.
Exactly
right. Okay, well, yeah, that was suitably
depressing.
do you want to talk about
let's talk about monsters.
Sasquatch, King Kong, Godzilla, Loch Ness,
goblin, yeah. Ghouls, a zombie, yeah, with no conscience. Ideally.
I just, you know, I know it's just writing a song, but at the same time, zombie with no conscience is just one of those things I think about. Like, they all have no conscience.
Yeah,
like, it's a zombie.
Yeah, like
whatever. He's got more money than me, you know. Maybe I would take the lunch with Jay-Z over the $500,000 just so I could ask him what, you know, what he thought a zombie actually was.
Hustle grind.
I'm sorry, that was a stupid joke.
Like, extreme hustle grinds. Yeah, because it's like, okay, so Godzilla doesn't have a conscience either. He's a giant lizard.
Not true. Godzilla does have a conscience.
Does he?
He helps people. He does.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
All right, it's a big apology. You know, Jason, you know,
it's a big fire-breathing lizard, so you know I know all about it. And I just like, no, Godzilla helps people until he gets really mad because we do stupid things.
Well, like, we know Mothra has a conscience.
That's true.
Yeah.
Mothra is Mothra.
That's a fact. So, you know.
Yeah. Sorry to be pedantic about Godzilla before this even starts.
No, that's fine. This is good. I'm just saying that, like, you know, so a zombie's got no, a ghoul's got no conscience, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Or goblin.
Maybe. I mean, I think a goblin does, because, you know, goblins are sometimes, you know, just like henchmen, and sometimes, you know, they're, you know,
yeah, and I don't know,
they just live in a cave or whatever, you know.
Like Nessie also, as much as, you know, people may or may not have seen her, I don't think that she's ever done anything wrong.
No.
Like, I mean, what?
And
she's a plesiosaur. Yeah. That's our best guess, right? Is that what?
Mm-hmm.
That's our cryptozoology. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any chance that Nessie's actually real, because, you know, all the technology we have and the ability to look at that lake or whatever. But at the same time, I just really hope it's like a dinosaur that's living at the bottom of that lake. It's just like, fuck, I hate people.
Oh, yeah, for
I hate
real.
People. I can't believe I let them see me. I hate this shit. Leave me alone. I'm going to turn invisible. Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway.
All right. So 3,
yep.
2, 1. Hello, and welcome back to We're Not So Different, a podcast about how we've always been idiots. My name is Luke. I'm an amateur historian. And as always, I'm joined by Dr. Eleanor Yanega, who is anything but. Today we're talking about demons, revenants, and other such monsters. But first, we have a question from Genevieve, I think. Yeah,
Ooh.
sorry if I messed that one up. Question. I recently visited the Cluny Museum,
yeah.
I'm guessing,
yeah, that's
in
right.
Paris,
yep. mm-hmm.
and was fascinated by the reliquaries. Loved the foot shape one, morbidly delighted by the busts with hinged skull tops for the decapitated martyred maidens.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the little tiny modest cylinders were surprising. So how widespread were reliquaries, and would that be something the average person could aspire to possess? And then also, what do you know about martyred remains scams?
Oh, so I love this. And first of all, shout out to the Cluny Museum. If anybody ever goes to Paris, absolutely check it out. It is great, and it's got all kinds of collections of interesting things. So for those who don't know, reliquaries are essentially statues that are made to hold the relics of saints in them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all kinds of things. Oftentimes, yeah, like there'll be, for example, you'll see like ones that are like shaped like an arm if it's got like arm bones in it or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
All Catholic altars have a relic of some description inside of them, which is interesting. That could be like very, very small. You know, you could get like a piece of a finger bone or something like that. So that's a thing. But yeah, people also kind of possess a lot of relics. So famously, my boy, Charles IV, one of his big things was collecting relics. And he would do this big thing where he would kind of like go on procession to various places. And he'd like ask to see people's relics while he was there. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, here's my relic. Would you like to have the relic, Charles? And he'd be like, oh, I couldn't possibly. Oh, well, since you offered. And then he would like take the relic like back to Prague and, you know, whatever, put it on display, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get people to come see them. But you do have, like, you know, big old like busts of saints and things like that. But you could also have really tiny little things, just like Genevieve says here.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is more people than you would think do have relics and, you know, tiny little reliquaries and like things that you can carry on you. But it wouldn't be something that the average person could aspire to possess. It's something that wealthy people can like aspire to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. And it is something that we do see people scamming on. You know, people are scamming on it generally, which is why we have like seven heads of John the Baptist, or, you know, there's a whole kind of like, ongoing thing between the Poles and the Czechs about who has, the relics of St. Adalbert. So, you know, like, and
I can't tell you how many times I've questioned who holds the real relics
That's
of
St. Right.
Adalbert.
That's right.
The question tears at my very soul every night.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
But it's like, those are not even like the scammiest ones. Like, you get scammy relics. So it's like, you get scammy relics up to specifically about Jesus and Mary, who are like everybody, you know, fan favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were both bodily ascended into heaven, you can't have like Jesus's finger or whatever. So for Jesus's relics, you get stuff like Jesus's baby teeth. There are like several sets of Jesus's baby teeth. You get the holy precipice, which is Jesus's foreskin, which I've mentioned before. You know, there are things like the Shroud of Turin, which is like Veronica's veil. So it's something that like touched him. You've got a crown of thorns. You've got the cross. You got things of this nature, right? Or like the Lance of Longarius that pierced his side at the crucifixion. For Mary, you have stuff like her breast milk. You have like scraps of her veil. You things of this nature. So, and there's like, there's a lot of like Mary's breast milk around the shop. So that's like pretty scammy in general. But we do know that like this is kind of something scammy that goes on as well, because people complain about it. Like, people complain about people selling relics, because in an ideal world anyway, you wouldn't be selling relics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, in an ideal world, it should just be like things that are held on to by the church or given as gifts. Like, you know, the idea that things are kind of like being given out with a price is usually to most people a kind of sign that you're being scammed. But, you know, other people just kind of really want to believe, so they will kind of like take it on board. And it's also kind of like a big thing where when people who are kind of saintly die, there is a lot of sort of hovering around their body, the wanting to make sure that you can control relics, who they go to, and what's going to happen with that. And then you also, on the other side of that, see, for example, with heretics who are burnt, a desire to make sure that there won't be relics for them. You know, like the ashes of Joan of Arc were scattered, right?
Nice.
So even though she's a saint, we don't have Joan of Arc relics.
They haven't gotten any of her baby teeth or whatever?
I don't know. Like, maybe they do, but I don't think so. Like, that would be quite a funny one. Yeah. So, it really kind of, like, ebbs and flows. But, yeah, people really do dig relics, and it's a really important expression of, like, Catholic faith, because it sort of allows you a direct line to the saints who are in God's presence, and then you can kind of, like, touch them. And, you know, I'm really into them. I went and saw, for example, in Bruges, I went and, like, touched the vial of Christ's blood, which is very cool, which is referenced in the movie In Bruges as well, which I think is very funny. But yeah, there, you know, I'm incredibly down for a reliquary, and have been, like, known to ask in really bad Italian where reliquaries are and things like that, because your girl's on the lookout, right? So yeah, I think that explains it fairly well. But yeah, great question. And it's fun though. Also, go look up relics generally, because I'll tell you what, when you get into like the modern saints, people are wild. Like, I've been to some churches in like Lisbon where it's just like, here's like a whole ass kind of like mummified corpse that you got dressed up in silk in your altar. Cool. cool. Yeah. So it's like
not weird at all, man.
Yeah, those ones get like hyped. So yeah, fun times. Fun times.
Oh man. Genevieve, thank you so much for the question. And if you'd like to ask us questions like that, then you can do so by joining our Patreon for just $5 a month, patreon.com/WNSDpod. And you know, we just started getting ads, if you might have heard at the beginning of this, but you know, if you want to hear this ad free and also help us out, you can subscribe to the Patreon for just $5 a month, as we just said. Bonus episodes, access to the Discord, ad free episodes. You get the idea. Check it out. And our next bonus episode on medieval funerary and burial practices will be out this Friday. And lastly, me and Eleanor are doing a stream of Elden Ring later this week.
Yeah.
And we will post the time on that on Twitter when we get it. But yeah, look for that, and it will be on my personal streaming channel, because I don't have a different one, which you can find at twitch.tv/LukeIsStillAmazing. Yeah, so, you know, we talked about ghosts last time, and we're back this episode to discuss even more spooky topics as we approach Halloween and All Saints Day, which I'm told is a real thing.
Yes.
And we're moving on from ghosts to the hard stuff, the real scary shit. Monsters, demons, and the revenant dead. No more warm and fuzzy saintly ghosts who come back and minister to the living by driving out the Germans, or benign spirits who return to help the living figure out which neighbor stole their sandals. That's all been replaced by the worst sorts of pure, unadulterated malevolence that Satan could send forth from the gates of hell to torment the living and tempt the faithful medieval Christian toward hell. Fire-wreathed demons walking the earth, preparing to torture innocents who refuse the call of the damned. So basically Balrogs, I guess, which is really metal as fuck when you think about it. Zombies and revenant dead, whose bodies rise from the grave, roam the land preying upon the living. Ogres and other such vile creatures prowl the woods, happy to grind your bones to dust to use in their heinous experiments. Succubuses, demonic entities who seduce men, were out in force, threatening to suck a guy off or get cream pied at a moment's notice. They're just going to fucking drain you of cum.
That's
at
right.
Any minute.
That is right.
They're going to drain it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly a wonder that the average medieval person was able to survive at all after being assailed on all sides by so many ghoulish demons and foul spirits. Eleanor, how did people in the Middle Ages survive all of these ghoulish encounters?
Your best bet was to make friends with one of those cream pie demons and then hope they protect you.
You just gotta keep coming in her and hope that she's gonna shield you from the other baddies or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's that's a really good way of doing it. You just kind of gotta bring them on side. It's like, you know, that one Rock movie based on the video game where there's the gorillas that fight.
Rampage.
I always thought it was lame that he was like Team Gorilla, because I always played like, you know, that one dinosaur with a real long snake neck. That was that was my shit.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see the movie. I did play the game, though.
I didn't see
that
the movie.
That dinosaur was, of course, really cool.
Yeah.
but I think any dinosaur is cool, so that's not a surprise at all.
Yeah, I'm way more interested in dinosaurs. Yeah. So, the point is, it's interesting because there's a lot more of an idea of there being kind of like a cosmology of monsters who are defo out there. And, you know, a good way to avoid them generally is getting right with your boy JC, you know, and he would kind of ward them off. But there's also just sort of like ongoing kind of worries about these things, because there's so much stuff in the medieval imagination that could, in theory, come and mess your shit up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It sounds pretty scary out there for the average medieval person. I've never been assailed by such forces, and I'm glad I haven't, because I would run screaming. If a hot demon chick was like, come inside me, I'd be like, no. I'm scared. No. And I would run away screaming.
You could, cause there, and then there's also, you know, the corollary, which is the spooky D, you know.
Like, oh, is that a real one? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can have like the spooky. Ah. So you've got like, so because you've got your incubuses and you got your succubuses. So your succubus is the one trying to get cream pied, and then what she does is she steals your sperm and then gives it to Satan, because Satan can't make his own sperm, because Satan can't create. He can only, you know, change things. And
of course everybody knows.
Yeah, so this is in the Malleus Maleficarum that so the succubus will steal your jizz and give it to the devil, and then when the devil has orgies with witches like he do, then he comes out the old jizz, and so the jizz that Satan comes is freezing instead of hot. So.
Wow, that is okay. Nope, I've found something that is actually terrifying. No, I can't go that far. Freezing cum. I just
So freezing cum. That's a big one. But then, so there's the corollary of the succubus who steals your jizz, and that's the incubus. And then the incubus knocks chicks up.
Ah.
So he's a cream pier. You see?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so we have some famous depictions of them. For example, you see them with Merlin's mother, because like Merlin is like half demon, half a regular. So and it's cute, because sometimes he's like a little dragon. And it's like he's making out with Merlin's mom, and like someone's peeking through the curtain, and he's like, rawr. and then there's one where he's just kind of like a big black devil. So you get that, you know, this idea that like ladies is just getting knocked up in the night by, and so incubuses and succubuses, they're a form of demon, right?
Yeah.
And demons are, the way to think about a demon in the medieval period is demons are essentially fallen angels. So demons kind of come along with the fall, along with Satan. This is kind of like a perfectly, you know, like Catholic thing to think about, is kind of like these monsters, because you know that there was, you know, the great battle. And then that's how kind of like hell gets set up. And so all those demons are in there, and they can kind of like, in theory, get out of hell, you know, to come mess with you at various times. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a useful thing to, warn people about, because, you know, there are all these guys, and then they also work in hell, right? So it's like, they're all like, it's a living, while like administering, you know, ironic tortures like spit roasting, you know, people who enjoyed mm-hmm. sodomy and things of that nature. So, you know, you'll always see demons. A good way to know that you're looking at a demon in medieval art is, like, in the first place, you might see a hell mouth, which is often, like, a big monstrous mouth that's got some fire coming out of it. And then there's, like, naked people getting flung into it by demons. Souls are always shown naked so that you know that they're souls. So, like, all those little monster guys are usually demons. And then if they're in hell, if you've got a hell scene, those are all demons as well. And it's cool because there's all sorts of ways that that they are depicted or thought of. And, you know, like, Bosch has some really interesting ones. All kinds of medieval people have all sorts of ways of showing them. But as a general rule of thumb, if you're talking about a demon, you're talking about somebody who's supposed to live in hell or is connected with hell, right? And then on top of this, you then have monsters, and monsters kind of exist within the natural world. So it's like, there's this idea of the monstrous, and they might be dangerous and you might kind of like think of them as evil in that way, but they are dangerous or evil in the same way, for example, that like a poisonous snake would be. So like simply kind of like exist out in nature doing their monstrous thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they serve the devil, right? So it's kind of like that's more like the horror of nature more generally, right? And then kind of like the last category to think about is the revenant dead. And the revenant dead are lads who are dead but can corporeally get up out of their grave and come fuck with you. And we see this rather a lot come up in ghost stories. So it's interesting because they are kind of like a ghost, but it's usually, but like their whole body is physically there. And interestingly about this, like whereas ghosts might be some guy you don't know, like we talked about last time, it's like some, I don't know, some dude who fucked up and needs your help. The revenant dead are most often known to their communities and like out here fucking with you. So like that's a guy you know. And you know he's dead, and you're like, ah, oh, man, like, Johannes has got out of his grave. And then you're in trouble. Yeah.
Damn, bro. Damn, Johannes. Get back in your grave.
Yeah, real talk. It's bad stuff, you know, so.
Yeah. Today I learned for the very first time that Incubus is a male succubus. And that's where the band takes its name. So that's, good news for me. I don't really know how I missed that. I am legendarily obtuse sometimes.
Yeah, mate, like, why don't you
it
have...
It is baffling to me.
Why don't you have your cream pie monster list on lockdown? Like, honestly.
Well, I just... I liked Incubus. I've been to like two Incubus concerts because I'm very old. I saw them at Red Rocks. It was awesome, but that's another story. And like they have songs talking about succubi. And so I'm like, yeah, they, so I knew that. And like, I don't know.
That's fair enough. Like, that's fair enough.
We talked a little bit about the demons, and is there anything else overarching to know? Like, would they just be seen like out in the world, like it would like stranded, or would they always be near like a hell mouth, or you know, how would that work?
So demons can kind of show up at random places. So it's an interesting one because demons can show up around the same sort of places that like you might also find ghosts. So demons can show up at crossroads. That's a popular one. Demons might show up at places like sites of execution. That's kind of a popular one. Demons can also be summoned. So you could you can do magic in order to summon demons. And as a general rule of thumb in the medieval period, there's more of a concern that this is being done sort of by members of the clergy. So there's a concern that like monks and stuff are calling forth demons, because as a general rule of thumb, it's seen that in order to like call forth demons, you need to do like big magic. Right? Like, you need to make a magic circle. You're going to have to scry some things on a wall. You're going to need to, like, have a whole kind of, like, Latin incantation in order to bring a demon forth. So they can be brought out if you so desire, by calling on them in this particular way. And this contrasts with sort of like the late medieval slash early modern way of thinking about demons coming to talk, more specifically to women slash witches, because they are not so often conjured as they kind of like go for women, and women go, oh yeah, sounds great, I'd love to, you know, get in on some spooky shit, because of how women are. But then, like, what will happen is that women will kind of gossip about how they found out about a demon, and then other women will be like, hello, demon, and just kind of call them, like, call for them. So it is, like, once you are aware of the fact that they're there, you can maybe call on them without all of this spooky nonsense, but it's a specific kind of, like, issue that women have. Because you know how women be. Women be gossiping about Satan.
Women do be conjuring.
Yeah, they do be conjuring. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because there's like the two things are like, it's either dudes who know an absolute ton of stuff and are like real hooked up within kind of a hierarchy of the church, or it's women who are just like, I don't know, just thought I'd ask the devil if you want to have sex.
Yeah. Right. So like, yeah, so do we, I mean, like, I know there are people who are labeled as wizards and witches, you know, you know, and they were shunned or killed or whatever, but are there people who just, like, went around calling themselves that and advertising, like, that was how they were? Or was that something that was sort of applied to people who were like, that's the bad person, and then like it just gets folded into the myths that go along with all these creatures or demons or whatever? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, nowadays there are people who are like,
I'm a witch.
I'm a wizard, you know, like, and that's fine, cool, I'm not making fun of that. What I'm saying is, like, is that something that people in the Middle Ages did, or is this something that was almost exclusively applied ex post facto to, you know, people who've been killed or maimed or whatever?
So it's interesting one because it's almost exclusively like after the fact or like during the trial that it gets applied to people. Because yeah, if you go around saying like I'm a wizard, you're probably going to get in trouble. Having said that, the claims by witch hunters are that they go around being like, hey, I'm a wizard. You want to get in on this shit? You want to, like, so like, there's kind of, like, an idea that the witch hunters have, and, like, granted, again, this is modern, that there's kind of, like, a recruitment campaign that it's, and so it's quite funny because what we see, like, during the witch panics and stuff in the early modern period is that it also kind of, like, oftentimes corresponds to, for example, confessionalization, so the process by which people become Protestants or Catholics or what have you. So, like, witchiness is often seen as being sort of like a form of religion that one can take on in the same way that one can take on Protestantism or can become a Puritan or can become, you know, like, whatever flavor of Christianity that you're going to choose. So, were people probably doing that? I doubt it because of the danger involved, but that's how it's generally seen. And you know, you see this kind of stuff really regularly. So for example, during the Albigensian Crusade, when the church goes after the good men and women of Languedoc, the way that they kind of describe the Cathar heresy, as they call it, is that it's got like a kind of evil, it's like an evil mirror version of the church that is convincing you to do bad things. Because when the church wants to explain to you why a group of people are bad, it's like, imagine us, but bad, right? So it's kind of like an inversion thing. And we see this in the witch panics. It's like, imagine us, but bad, right? So it's like, there's not a whole lot of imagination going on. It's more just like this same thing, but applied in that particular way.
Right, that makes sense. Still, I want people in pointy hats, you know, who are actual wizards. I don't want anybody getting persecuted or at all, but, you know, wizards cool to me. Yeah, so I did want to ask a question about the Revenant Dead. So, like, what is the difference, if there is a, I mean, I'm assuming they're not zombies because they can't really pass that trait on and create more Revenant Dead by like eating or biting you, or is that
so
is that something, I mean, I realize that zombies are like a specific like Creole and Caribbean thing, you know. So I realized that they probably didn't have the exact same thing, but was this just a version of zombies, or was it completely, you know?
So yeah, it's an interesting one, because so Rodent Dead are like in a lot of ways how we would think of as zombies, but they don't, there's not that kind of like contagion aspect to it. So there isn't the idea that like if they bite you or whatever, you're going to become one, but there is an idea that they will beat you to death, right? So like they might simply like beat your ass to death and then you will be dead. And there's this real concern about them attacking people. And the attacks can do a number of different things. So you can either like attack so hard that people die, just like a straight up beatdown. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will become so frightened that they die. Like that's one. And then there's also just kind of like getting beat up and maimed by them. And so this is one of like the real, real concerns about the Revenant Dead, is not just that like they're out of the ground, which they oughtn't to be, but that they are attempting to harm people. So for example, in the Byland ghost stories, you have a story about like a named guy who he was not a good dude, and he got buried at Byland Abbey, but he had really openly had a concubine, and apparently he then gets up out of his grave and like goes and rips his concubine's eye out, and like
Jesus.
And then the monks were like, all right, we got to get rid of this fucking guy. And so, like, there's this kind of, there's an ongoing way of sort of dealing with the Revenant Dead in the medieval period, which is that you dig them up, you decapitate them, and then you move their body out of hallowed ground. They can't be in hallowed ground. Oftentimes that takes it takes the version of you will take them and put them in kind of like liminal places. So, like, for example, in marshland. That's a really big one.
Interesting.
But sometimes the Revenant Dead as well, like it might not even be that they physically and corporeally attack you, although that's most common. So for example, in the Icelandic sagas, there's lots of like the Revenant Dead that come beat your ass. Like that, this is, it's an ongoing problem in Iceland. It's like,
they couldn't get it. They were like, leave us alone. Like, Dragor, go back to your crypt. Leave me alone.
Exactly.
I'm tired of this shit.
Just a real problem. You know, like you invite someone over for dinner, they die. And then the next night they're coming to kill your ass. It's terrible. Right. So, but there's this also thing where they can also kind of like, do sort of magic so that you see shadows and like creepy things that you oughtn't to see. So sort of like cast images across your eyes and things like that. And then sometimes when that's happening, they'll go dig someone up who was a bad guy who recently died and then like reinter them somewhere else. So you might not see them corporeally, but they can be kind of like doing magic that fascinates you and scares you in that way. So they have the ability to do kind of like altering things. And we see these kind of similar practices then later kind of get picked up in the modern period with ideas about vampirism. You know, kind of like really similar stuff, like where you like you dig a body up and you decapitate it. Like that, like worry about vampires. But vampires more specifically are kind of like a modern thing. You don't really have a concern about blood sucking in the same way in the medieval period, although there is a worry that like just because someone's dead doesn't mean that they're gonna not come back. It's just that it isn't so linked to exsanguination more specifically.
Vlad the Impaler was a, you know, he was a medieval he was a medieval ruler, just barely, so you know that's you know, and that's pretty interesting that all just developed, you know, way after the fact, I guess. That's cool.
Yeah.
So they didn't have anything like vampires back then? I mean, well, I guess, you know, yeah, sorry.
You would have kind of like blood sucking, like, I mean, so there are some ideas about like blood sucking monsters or, you know, things of this nature, especially from the demonic. It might be that like a demonic thing might attack you and suck your blood. That kind of exists. And we definitely see them outside of Europe. So for example, there's kind of like blood sucking creatures that will live in the Middle East, that you kind of like see that will come out from under the sand and like go for you. So, like, though there are things like that, but there's a whole host of monsters in the medieval period that'll just kind of, like, attack you randomly. And they're just kind of, people are a little bit more worried about, like, poison is a big thing. People are worried about kind of, like, getting bitten and poisoned, and less so, like, getting bitten and having your blood sucked out for whatever reason. Yeah.
Right, right. Interesting, interesting. I just like to see how these things, you know, kind of kind of move, you know, because, you know, as you've said about Castlevania before, it is presented as a medieval thing, and it was, in fact, not medieval. It was early modern. You know, but you know, that doesn't help the poor medieval peasants of Wallachia who were terrorized by this vampire. Now does it, Eleanor?
No, it doesn't. But, you know, and, like, this is what we could see here is it's just source survival, right? Because, you know, since the peasants were unable to write about their experiences, it passes into memory, you know, and there's nothing that we can do about it. So there you go.
Yeah, and, of course, the church scrubbed all references to it.
Obviously. Because, you know,
I mean, now that one I would actually believe, but that's neither here nor there. So... you know, we've got demons and we've got the Revenant dead, and then there's the big catch-all, and that's monsters. And you know, these are the big ones because, you know, we still talk about, you know, that regardless of, you know, what science proves or what we see or whatever, we still talk about these, you know, monsters like this today. And, you know, I just think it's interesting that, you know, they were you know, they had their own version of, like, the Mothman or the Jersey Devil or, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's really funny. Okay, because it's like, so to get nerdy about it, like, our word monster, it comes out of Latin. And it either comes from monere, which it means to warn, or monstrare, which means to show. And so what we kind of mean by that is that these guys are, like, showing the corruption that is possible within the natural world, but at the same time, they're kind of a disruption of it, if that makes sense. So it's sort of like when a monster comes out, it kind of shouldn't be there, but at the same time, it is, right? So I made a little list of all of the monsters I could think of that I thought I'd talk about, and I think that they're cool. I did it in alphabetical order because I'm a fucking nerd. So congratulations, everybody. the first ones up are basilisks. And basilisks are cool because they kind of have, like, a little bit of a chicken head. And they kind of, like, have the tail of a snake. They usually have wings. Basilisks are cool because they can kill you by looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like if you look at one, then you'll turn to stone. And that's the basilisk thing. Medieval Europeans claim that they live in Ethiopia. And this is like a, like...
I'm sorry.
I know.
Like, oh no, that happens in Ethiopia. The chicken-headed, poison, turn-you-to-stone dinosaur thing. It lives in Ethiopia, yeah.
Yeah.
Just over there.
It's, like, quite funny because they'll be like, oh yeah, over there you'll get, like, you know, there's stuff like basilisks and elephants. Right, and which are kind of like thought of on the same level, where you're like, "That's wild," you know.
That's awesome.
And you know, a lot of like these monstrous ideas, you know, it's kind of like, "Oh yeah, they just live over there," right? Like there's a way of kind of like looking at it over there, like they're just somewhere where you can't get hold of them, right? So, within this, for example, there are like this Cetus is one, and Cetuses are sort of like sea monsters. And you will see them a lot of time in art, for example, like a swallowing Jonah. Like, it's not necessarily like a whale. It'll be what you call a cetus. And if you've ever seen kind of like, even like early modern fancy depictions of like dolphins or whales, they don't look anything like dolphins or whales. They look kind of like a monster, right? Mm-hmm. And it's quite funny. So they'll have kind of like big old mouth, sometimes kind of like flappy bits that are a little bit somewhere between a wing, somewhere between a fin, and like that's like a sea monster, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then I really like dracantipedes, and dracantipedes are cool. So dracantipedes have like the top half of a sexy maiden, but then the bottom is like a snake-like And
hell yeah.
And these are often how you see Satan depicted in the Garden of Eden. So it'll be like, sexy lady, but a snake. Huh? Huh?
So, hey, what about this? You thought about this?
Yeah, right? So it's like, that does kind of two things for you. It lets you kind of like have this, a cool monster myth. And also, like, you get to blame sexy lady some more for the fall of man. So that's good. Right? Like,
Well, yeah. I mean, that. What else are you going to do?
Yeah. And then, of course, you got dragons. Shout out. Shout out to a legend. Dragon.
The best.
The best.
The goat. Yep.
Yeah. And like, so don't confuse a dragon with a wyvern. We'll do a wyvern now as well. So a dragon got four legs and wings. Mm-hmm. A wyvern's got two legs and wings.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be
confused with a drake.
Yeah.
Which can't fly. Which doesn't have wings, I think.
Yeah. Like, and they're like a little more looking like an alligator. Around the show.
Right.
So, like, these guys, you know, they'd be blown fire. Sometimes mm-hmm. they are used to, as a stand-in for the devil. They are pretty cool, in general.
They're used as a stand-in for being fucking awesome.
Fucking cool! But yeah. Being fucking cool! Yeah. We love dragons, folks.
Well, you'll see. Elden Ring is just filled with, like, dragons and near dragons and wyverns and drakes mm-hmm. and worms and dragonkin and people that try to turn it. Yeah, it's all good stuff. It's a rich milieu, yeah.
Oh, I love it, yeah. And then you've got giants, you know.
Hell yeah.
Giants, you know.
Yeah, giants are awesome.
Yeah.
Like, so are we talking about... Then this is just for my own edification. Are we talking about like, you know, oh, this guy's 7 feet tall? Or are we talking about like the giants that are mentioned in Genesis? Like, are we talking about the Genesis giants? Or
yeah, so it's like, you know, Genesis giants, like Goliath and Nimrod, right? Like those But then there's also this idea that there are races of giants like them. So one of the foundational stories, for example, of the island of Britain is that a Trojan named Brutus... gets out of, like, survives the Trojan War, sails away, lands on the island of Britain, and then there is a race of giants here, which he slays.
Right.
And it's also considered that, like, one would need to slay giants in order to live on Britain. So it's like they are dangerous and a danger to men. So they are a monster. So you can kind of think of them as one of the monstrous races. But I just decided to not because they don't kind of come up in the same way as we'll talk about the monstrous races in a moment. They mm-hmm. don't come up in the same way as kind of like living over there, which is what other people do. So it's like you might just come upon a giant, basically. And then you got your griffins. So, you know, it's got the body of a lion, the head and wings of an eagle. And griffins are a monster and they are quite fierce. But people like them in the same way that they like dragons. So,
hell yeah.
So they kind of come up a lot. Then you've got gryllus, and they are kind of like little guys who have like a head of a man, but then like they walk around on two legs of beasts. So like think about if you had like a fawn or a satyr that doesn't have the middle bit. It's just like head and legs.
Huh.
And that's just like a little guy. A little guy, right?
Hey, they love coming up with little guys.
Yeah.
That's something we all have in common. Everybody likes coming up with like a little creature that is either cool or nefarious or, you know, assign a characteristic, but it's still awesome.
Like, you also have, you know, carrying over from the classical period, like griffins, you get your harpies. Head of a woman and like the body of a bird. And they're associated with storm winds a lot.
Yeah.
And then I guess... we kind of have to talk about Leviathan. And I'm fucking obsessed with Leviathan. And Leviathan is kind of shown in all sorts of different ways. So Leviathan can sometimes be like a giant whale. Sometimes he's mm-hmm. a giant demon. Sometimes he is a giant dragon. And he is hanging out in the abyss. Is sort of a representation of Satan. Like he's maybe kind of like seen as being Satan sometimes. But sometimes he's seen as kind of serving Satan and apart from Satan. And the idea is that at the end of the world, Leviathan is going to come out of the abyss to eat creation. Wee. And he's just going to go like, chomp. I love Leviathan.
So like a world serpent? Oh, like
It's same way as kind of like, what's it, was it Yiz Striggle.
That's the tree. Oh, shit. What's the word? I'll look it up.
Yeah, but like same thing. So he's gonna kind of come at the end of the world. He'll be unleashed and he's gonna eat things, basically. So
Jormungandr?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So and then like satyrs are there. So part, dude, part, fawn. They'll shag your wife, whatever.
Hate it when that happens.
And then we have a sea swine who are really, really cool. And they are kind of like a fish with the head of a wild boar. I really like
them. But why?
Because wild boars are scary, right?
Okay, that's true. No, I was just wondering if there was like a philosophical or theological component, or if this was just something like, hey, that's fucked up. And I'm like, you're right, that is fucked up.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a lot of the sea monsters is kind of like, damn, imagine that. That'd be scary, right? Like, the sea monsters are kind of, it's interesting because a lot of it seems like a game of telephone or something where you see something, then someone is like, oh man, there's pigfish out there. Right.
Yeah.
And you got to worry about that.
I was going to ask you a question about the ocean. So like you call it the abyss. So does that just mean like it's somewhere we can't go because it's the deep, dark ocean and, we can't go there? Or did they see like deeper parts of the ocean as like, a gateway to hell generally or abyssal?
A little bit of both, because the idea is that since the ocean is so deep and it goes down, eventually you're going to hit hell.
That makes sense.
Do you see what I mean? So like,
I do. Absolutely. I mean like, yeah, that. If hell is below you on an astral plane, then once you dive far enough down, you're going to get there. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's kind of like a horror of things that come out of the deep as a result because
right.
Hell's down there, Then there's sirens, and sirens are confusing because they do be looking like harpies. But the difference between like a siren and a harpy is that sirens do be singing.
Right.
And then they might, and you might want to try and go have sex with them, and then that's how they're going to kill you. Whereas a harpy doesn't have that. Also, a good way to kind of tell apart like a harpy and a siren in art is like, as a general rule of thumb, the harpies oftentimes they might just have like titty and face is the only kind of human thing, whereas sirens are often kind of like more like a mermaid. So it's more kind of like a waist up type situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Then there's another, I don't know if I'm going to get this sea monster right, but it's called Skatuvalar, I think. And it's kind of, so we got this from the Icelandic people, as I'm sure you can kind of see from the name. And it's kind of fish that has like big wings like a ray that are kind of spiky. And they're so big that they look like they're an island, and they kill sailors by then being like, haha, I'm a fish, and like overturning a boat. So
haha, I'm a fish, like, all right, man, cool.
And it's like, okay, and so they're kind of like out there, and there's this sort of like worry about that, right? You also have sphinxes make it over.
Interesting.
Part woman, part lion, part snake. They're gonna ask you their little riddles three. Maybe they'll have ego.
Oh, is that what does it? Is the Sphinx what does the riddles three? I always thought that was just the common bridge troll.
Yeah, well, common bridge trolls might get it done too, but it's usually Sphinxes that you see, and then they'll tear you apart if you answer them wrong. So they're very fierce.
Tough but fair.
Yeah.
Tough but fair.
And then there's a little guy I like called a Tarrasque. And they're kind of like a dragon, but they don't have wings. And they are apparently supposed to be spawned from a leviathan and what's called an anakis, which is kind of like, it's an animal sort of like a bison that stinks. So it's sort of like half dragon, half bison. And they're just like a little guy, except they'll eat you. They were said to inhabit particularly southern France. And Saint Martha went down there and was like, hey, knock that off, Tarrasque.
I found an awesome painting here of Saint Martha and the Tarrasque. The Tarrasque is just like chomping down on a guy, having a meal.
They're so cute. I think that they're really neat, and
this is awesome.
And then, okay, one that people don't think of, unicorns.
Hell yeah.
Unicorns are monsters. And for the medieval period, unicorns are not nice. Like,
really?
Yeah, unicorns are. So the first...
Oh, I think I knew that. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
So it's like a thing to remember about a unicorn is that they are not horses with horns. Okay? They're emphatically not. They're part lion, part goat. And they have the hooves, they have the hooves of goats, and often the beard of a goat, and they have the mane of a lion. So they are not, they're not horses at all. They just kind of look a little bit like horses. And they're very, very fierce, but they like maidens. So you can like take...
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I know, right? And so you can take a maiden, and then they'll be like, oh, I like this chick, and then they'll come and like hang out with her, and that's how you capture them. But they are really, really fierce, and they'll kill people. So the way that we think about unicorns now is being like this pretty little horse thing that like would just be nice to ride. Not how medieval people think about them at all. They are like, they're quite ornery, and they will they will fuck you up, right? So that's one. And then
I had a question. So what's the did they make a differentiation between like? Or how did they differentiate between, like, say, an electric eel, you know, which they would say, you know, is like magic. Was that a monster, or was that just an animal that had, like, I mean, it doesn't really matter.
They're kind of seen as monstrous. Yeah. It's sort of like, ah, you know, like that's like kind of a scary thing. Although a lot of the time, one of the things about monsters is that, like, they don't show up very often.
Right.
So it's kind of like, oh, but, you know, you hear tell of them. Right. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you got your Xiphias. And this is a sea monster that kind of has a beak. It's sort of like a whale that has like legs and kind of like a beaky mouth. Like, kind of think about like, you know, the early elephant guys that you see in the prehistoric period that have kind of like mouthy mouth that's sort of pointy. So, and that's a Xiphias. So those are just, like, guys that come up a lot. You also get, like, manticores. Manticores being kind of like a lion bird thing that is also poisonous. Manticores come up a lot. But, like, these are the ones that you kind of see most often come up in art. And then...
And was the Krampus from around this time, or was that...
So that's more... Later? That's a little bit later, and that's more early modern.
Okay,
Is the answer. And then, so I guess that we need to talk then also about the monstrous races.
Yeah.
And I think that the monstrous races are really cool. And it's interesting because, you know, the way that medieval people kind of, like, medieval people don't have exactly the same concept of races we do. They're still racist. Like, I want to be, they're still not always cool with, like, with people from other places, but it's not always necessarily imagined in the same way. But part of how you can kind of like see their xenophobia and their worry about, you know, other people is in the monstrous races. And there are kind of four major groups that you see. And the first are like the Blemmyae. Okay. And Blemmyae are cool, and you see them a lot. And they are the guys whose head is in the middle of their chest.
Yeah.
Okay. So they are just like a little dude, and they kind of like are said to live oftentimes in Africa, of course, and so that's kind of like one of them. You also have the Cynocephalics, and they are a race of people who have dogs for heads, dog heads, like.
Nice.
So they look like a person from the kind of shoulders down, but it's a dog up top. And you hear them kind of like said to live in all sorts of different places. Sometimes they live in Egypt. Sometimes they live in India. Sometimes they live in China. So like they are all over the place. Sometimes they live in an island off of Sweden. But you might get them any time. Another group of monstrous people are the Penati, and they just have real big ears. Like, I don't... Like,
hey man, come on, I'm not a monster. Now. That's rude.
I know, right?
That's rude.
It just like seems like such a weird thing where they're just like, you know, those big old ear having people, and you're like, really?
Yeah.
This is what you're like, kind
man,
of like.
Come on, bro.
Like, what? All right. But they're just like quite large. It's like bigger than your head. And so they are again like one of those ones that you get told often like live in India or Africa. And then on top of them, you have skiapods, and skiapods have one leg and one giant foot, and
yeah.
and they hop around all the time on they on they one leg and they one foot. And then when they get kind of like bored or tired, because they're often said to live in Africa, they then shield themselves by like putting their big old foot over themselves and then like making their own shade.
Yeah, it, every picture I can find of them is just them shading themselves with a big foot, and it looks like they're just trying to self-suck. Everyone.
Yeah, yeah, it really does, doesn't it? But it's like, and sometimes you'll see kind of like references to like the, it's seen as kind of a scene because they're often imagined as being naked, and it's often kind of like they're putting they ass in the air, and it's all like, oh, well, why would you put your ass in the air if you weren't trying to like pound, right? Like,
yeah.
It is kind of like the idea here, I guess. So yeah. That's quite funny. And then, like, kind of last but not least are wild men. And wild men look a lot kind of like the way that we sort of imagine Bigfoot. They're kind of like a human. They have a human face, but they're, like, really, really hairy. And they kind of, like, live in the wilderness.
Right.
So, like, they're quite kind of like, they look a lot like, you know, large apes or something, but they're hairy all over. And they're thought to be able to kind of, like, use tools, like clubs, things like that. So they are kind of, like, more like men than they are an ape, but they are all, like, fuzzy. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, like, that's everybody that I can think of off the top of my head. When I was like,
so,
list time.
I love a list. Give me all the lists. I'm not kidding. So, like, with these races, were they, like, was this just, like, yeah, these people just live in the woods or Africa or where, like, and it's just, like, a whole, and they're just assumed to be a whole race of people. So, like, they don't even have a separate name for them. It's just, like, yeah, those are, yeah.
Yeah.
You see a big hairy beast thing, that's a wild man, you know.
Yeah, and so that one's interesting because the wild men, oftentimes, they're just, like, oh, yeah, they live in the woods. And
you're just like, that's just a guy, that's just an aesthetic guy, like he just lives out there, you know.
Yeah,
for
like
fun.
That's like, kind of like his deal, right? So it's like, whereas you tend to see for example, your cynocephaly, like they're supposed to like live in India or whatever, it's not the same thing for wild men, where wild men might be anywhere, who knows, right? So that's a more different one. So similarly to like skiapods are more specifically often like related to like Africa. Like that's where that you're going to find them. So so it's interesting because you see those guys, like, you know, Blemier and people like that, they're always kind of just like, it's over there. And they're far away. They're not here. But wild men might be here. And that's kind of the difference.
Right. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. I fucking love monsters. As it should be readily apparent to anyone. I did have a question to indulge myself about dragons.
Yes.
So, was there any crossover between like the westernized dragons, you know, like the Game of Thrones type dragons, and the eastern, like very snake like slender dragons, or was that those two things just didn't kind of meet or whatever?
You kind of see like the more slender dragons come up like in like an aesthetic way, where sometimes you know you'll have a little bit like more snaky guy, but they're fundamentally really different, and they're also thought of as really different because. Whereas Chinese dragons are thought of as kind of like a lucky thing and like an animal that might bestow upon you like good things, the, you know, Western dragons are more specifically considered to be like evil. And you see them kind of like associated with basilisks. You see them associated with the devil. You know, like a dragon is always going to be bad within that. Interestingly, also, there is, within Chinese culture, they also have unicorns, which are called qilin. They look a little bit more like a dragon, but that is a horse. But they're kind of like, but they have a one horn as well. So they kind of come up, they also show up in like Japanese and Korean mythology as well. Like, it's not just Chinese, much in the same way that dragons are. And they are sometimes associated with giraffes, So like which is quite interesting because then so sometimes Chinese people are like, yeah, you can find a lot of them in Africa. So it's like, you know, everyone's kind of like doing the same thing about being like, oh yeah, they're over there, right? Like that's kind of like a thing that comes up.
They're over in that faraway place that I couldn't possibly travel to because that's not, you know, most people don't ever travel, you know, that far.
Oh, but you know, where that you'll see a Chilean most often is on if you ever have a Kirin beer, that guy on there, that's a Chilean.
Huh.
So like, you know, and you're like, all right, but so they're quite interesting because they also have this kind of like real differing kind of like way of thinking about it, but they still sort of like fill the same gap in the way of thinking about them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And yeah, all I can think about with the unicorn is that the narwhal, which is that whale that has
Yeah.
a tusk, that's actually a tooth,
Yeah.
not a horn. And I do know that I think they used to use those as like fake unicorn
Oh
horns or
yeah.
something
So
like
yeah,
that.
narwhal tusks are like traded on the market up into the early modern period, specifically as unicorn horns. And the idea behind it is that you trade them because they can get poison out of things. So like they're guard against poison. So you can stick a unicorn horn in something and it'll like suck the poison out essentially.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
Interesting.
yeah, it's like it's quite funny because that's why you would hunt them. Like that's why you would go looking for a guy who's so dangerous, is because you want that sweet, sweet horn. And so narwhal tusks get traded a lot as a result of that.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Well, yeah. Unless you have anything else on this, I think that'll be the end of the episode here. But this was awesome. Monsters, you know,
Monsters.
goblins, ghouls, and revenant dead with no conscience. So yeah, wow, that was terrible. thanks. Thanks for listening. Yeah, subscribe to the Patreon, ad-free bonus episodes, new bonus episode coming out this
Hey.
week, where we're going to talk about things like those people that buried a scythe with a vampire over a guy's neck because they thought it was a vampire. I don't really care if that's medieval or not. I just think it's interesting. And probably other stuff too, funerary and burial practices. But Eleanor, where can the people find you in the meantime, besides on TV, on History Hit,
Yeah.
where you are doing spooky
Spooky
stuff?
things. Yeah, so that's
It
coming.
looks really cool, by the way. The
Thanks.
preview stuff looks
Oh,
cool.
snap, there's previews. Okay, cool. Yeah, like it's
Or
out.
no, I'm sorry, the preview images. Oh,
Yeah.
is it out now? I
I
thought
think
it wasn't out until.
it's not out. It's not out now.
Okay,
It's definitely not out
okay,
now because they're still being like, could you do this voiceover to me at the last minute? And I'm like, yeah. So
okay.
100% it's not. Because I was almost late to class this morning because I was doing voiceovers.
Oh,
But, you know,
geez.
shout out to Matt, my long-suffering director, who is really putting this all together at the last minute. God bless him. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Going Medieval. You can check out my blog, going-medieval.com. And, you know, once more, shout out to anyone who pre-orders my book, The Once and Future Sex, because apparently that's really important that I get pre-orders in. Yeah.
Yep, it looks cool. Yeah, and my name is Luke. You can find me on Twitter at Luke is Amazing. You can find my other podcast, A People's History of the Old Republic, probably wherever you're listening to this right now. It's about Star Wars. Check it out if you want to hear me talk about that kind of stuff. Otherwise, yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.